protocol, is a protocol between k plus one parties, so there are k servers, there is one user, and each server holds a copy of a database, and the database for us is an n-bit binary string, and user holds an index I, which is an integer between 1 and 10, and what user wants is to retrieve the ith bit of the database, and user can talk to each of the databases. And we assume that the database, the servers holding the database do not communicate. So, and we want to design a protocol that will allow user to get the ith bit that he wants. However, that will ensure the privacy of the user. So each individual server will get no information about what the user will ask. And this no information is the information theoretic sum. So, and we want to minimize the communication complexity of such protocols. So, the problem was introduced by Chorvold, Kushnevitz, and Sudan around 10 years ago. There has been lots of progress, lots of work, and effort invested. So here is what is known. So in case there is just a single server, there is a trivial protocol of sending the whole database to the user, and it's essentially the best known. So linear amount of communication is necessary. In case there are three servers and more, there has been a long chain of improvements, starting from, say, for three servers, from the cube root achieved by in the initial paper, that was later improved to fifth root by Ambainis, then to m to the 1 over 5.25 by Schulewitz and Raymond, and then, so the results about that I was talking yesterday. So the current unconditional record is m to the 1 over 32 million, and under number theoretic assumption, we have m to the 1 over log log n. So this is the current state for three servers. It's interesting that although we have all this interesting improvements in the three server case and more, the two server case has never been improved. So the upper bound is cube root 10, and it's the upper bound from the initial paper, although now we have several quite different protocols, but all of them end up with the same communication complexity. So here I mention three protocols, but really there are more. Those are just somehow the extremes of being. So those are most, so the least similar to each other. And the best known lower bound is 5 log n. By Winder and DeWolf, so there is a huge gap. So given this, given that it seems quite hard to improve the lower bound to something super polynomial, so there have been some attempts to prove stronger lower bound than restrictive models. So the first such attempt was made by Ito. So he established an n to the 1/4 lower bound in the following restricted model. So in his model, he says that if the database is fixed, then servers are restricted to return affine functions of the queries. So the notion of affine here is a little subtle, and I will not go into defining it, but this is some restricted model. Another restricted model was considered, was introduced by Goldreich, Harald Schulman, and Trevisan, and later their results were strengthened by Gemmer and DeWolf. So the model is the following. There is a protocol with two servers. The answers, the questions to the servers can be long. The answers can also be long. However, we impose a restriction that the user, given those two long answers, reads at most S bits from each of the answers. And then based on those S bits, so two S bits, the user computes his final output. So if the protocol can be cast like that, then no matter how clever is the computation done by the users, by the servers. So the amount of communication in such protocol has to be n to the 1 over s plus 1. So this is another restricted model. And in this work, we will introduce one more restricted model, and that we establish a cube root and lower bound. So we call PR schemes that fit into our model bilinear group-based PR schemes. I will not define what this is right now, so hopefully it will be clear a little bit later. So now just a few remarks about these models. So the models are not really comparable. So one cannot say that one of them is somehow wider than the other. Each of them generalizes all currently known PR schemes. And it's really the question of taste, which what model we prefer, what model we believe is more suitable to extend to hopefully more general or advanced. So here is the planning of the talk. So first I'll give an example of a PR scheme from our work with David. So it's just one of the PR schemes, and I want to show it, because this will be my way to motivate the restrictions that we impose on a PR scheme. So I will demonstrate the scheme, and then empathize some properties of the scheme, and then say that every PR scheme that has these properties satisfies sufficient our model and should have this cube root of the bounded communication complexity. And finally, I will talk somewhat about our technique, about how we establish this bound. So here is an example of the AR scheme. So remember that so we have these two servers, each of them holds this n bit long database. There is a user holding index I. So these objects, I mean, so at least they don't have so much structure, so binary string and integer. So in order to start making some interesting transformations, so we convert this problem into a different one, where the server would hold, so it's an algebraization step. The server will hold some multivariate polynomial of low degree, and the user will hold a point in the space. And the user will want to evaluate that multivariate, to learn the evaluation, the value of that multivariate polynomial at the point on the space known to the user. So here are, so here is a little more on this transformation. So we will choose the number of variables to be cube root n, so cube root of the database size, and the degree of the polynomial will be 3. So this happens because this is, so this is the right way to choose parameters. They were optimized. So this is very high dimensional. So this is very high dimensional space for some finite field that is cube to the cube root of points. So there will be n points that would be somehow special. These n points will correspond to indices of the data, to indices within the database. And we will choose polynomials f to represent the database in the following sense. So if the user, so the value at point, so there are n of those special points, p1 and so on, pn. So point pi, the value of this polynomial f at point pi will represent the value of the I bit of the database. So this is the setup. So this, I mean, so I don't go into details how we convert the database into a polynomial, but it's fairly natural stuff. So starting from this point, we look only at the algebraic problem. So two servers, each holds a polynomial, user holds a point, wants to obtain a private evaluation. So here is the first attempt outside protocol. So it may be clear already at this point that what we will do, we'll be doing polynomial interpolation, univariate polynomial interpolation. So so the user has this point, and in order to ask the queries, so really now I'll show a protocol that will need 4 servers, and then I'll improve it to 2 servers. But this protocol is just very simple, it has very nice intuition on what's happening. So there is this point that is known to the user. The user picks a random line through this point and gives each of 4 servers a single point on this line. So this is what the user is doing. So this point goes to server 1, this point goes to server 4. Now the servers, well, they get these points. It's clear that none of this, so each individual point on this line discloses no information about the initial point held by the user. So this way we ensure privacy. And so servers respond with the values of that multivariate polynomial known to them at the points that they get. So they send back to the user the values of that multivariate polynomial. Well, so now the user looks at these 4 values that he gets. So he gets 4 values of a univariate polynomial on a line. So the user considers the restriction of the multivariate polynomial to this line. It's a univariate polynomial. User knows it at 4 points, and does the interpolation, and obtains the value that he wanted. So here, everything is very simple. It's cube root n communication complexity. The protocol is clearly correct. Also, you can interpolate degree 3 polynomials on 4 points. So what we don't like here is that we have 4 servers. So the cube root of n is coming for the following reason. Remember that the dimension of our space is cube root n. So this multivariate polynomial is degree 3 in cube root n variables. So in order to communicate a point, I need, so the description of the point has cube root n coordinates. This is how cube root n arises. And so the questions that users send to servers are cube root n long, the answers are one field element long, so constant size.
But once again, why cube n? I mean, because there are cube n choose 3 is n?
Yeah, cube n choose 3 is n. So here is a better scheme. So here is the scheme based on essentially the same idea, but that will allow us to get away just with 2 servers rather than 4 servers. So again, the user has his point, he draws a line through this point, he gives one point to one server, the other point to the other server. Oh, but now if the user would get back just the values at those points, that won't be good enough, because you cannot interpolate a degree 3 polynomial from its values at 2 points. However, the servers will send, now the servers will be sending back not only the values of that multivariate polynomial, but also the values of partial derivatives of that multivariate polynomial at this point. So, and if you are uncomfortable with partial derivatives over finite fields, don't worry. So it's not essential to our protocol, but this is how the protocol really works. So it's not essential for understanding our result, our lower bound result. But this is how the protocol works. So the user returns the values of that multivariate polynomial and the values of partial derivatives. And so again, we see privacy immediately. So the input of each of the servers is the same as in the previous protocol. So we get privacy. We also get cube-root-n communication for the same reason. So now we need to argue correctness, and this is fairly straightforward. So all we need to show is the following. Is the following basic algebraic fact on calculus, I would say, that if you have a multivariate polynomial and you know all its partial derivatives at some point, then if you draw a line through this point, then from the values of these partial derivatives, you can compute the value of the derivative of the univariate polynomial along any line passing through this point. So this is the trick that we do. So it's just some chain rules, nothing particularly complicated. Given the server responses, the user learns the values of the univariate polynomial on a line at two points, and also the values of partial derivatives of this polynomial at the same two points. And here is again a basic algebraic fact. If you have a univariate polynomial and of degree 3 and at two points, you know its values and derivatives. So based on that information, you can interpolate polynomial and recover its value at zero. So this is the whole protocol.
Sorry, Sergey,
yep.
Why is communication still n to the 1, percent n to the 1 set partial derivative?
Exactly, each of them is 1 bit. So each of them is a
sorry, you said it's over Q.
It's over Q, but Q is constant. So for this protocol to work, the only thing I need is to have at least 3 points on the line, so Q can be 3.
Okay. So the previous protocol with 4 servers was unbalanced.
And this is balanced.
Okay, sorry, that's okay.
So in the previous protocol, the answers were just one field element. Here, the answers are cube root n field elements, but it does not affect the asymptotic communication complexity. It's cube root n in both cases. So what are the properties of this protocol that I want to stress? So there are two. So the first property is the following. So remember, so the servers have taken the database, and they represented it by a function on. So by this function, by functions, the cubic multivariate polynomial on the linear space at Q to the n. So let's think of the linear space, just say as an additive group. So the database was represented by a function on this group, and the protocol allowed users to retrieve. So the user would use such protocol to retrieve the values of this multivariate polynomial points p sub I corresponding to indices on the database. However, the protocol would also perfectly well work and allow users to retrieve the values of this multivariate polynomial at other points in the space that do not correspond to indices in the database. So this is the property that I call that I will call for the protocol to be group based. So it's a key property. I will explain it again. So the property of this protocol is that it allows users to retrieve the value of this cubic polynomial not only at the points that correspond to database bits, but on arbitrary points in the space. And this is the property that that will be one of the properties, so the property of the protocol being group-based, that a database is represented by a function in a group, the user secret shares according to the group structure, and can retrieve the values of this function at any group elements. So this is the first property. The second property, well, it might not be so obvious from the protocol as I presented it, but really you can play with it a little and see that the computation that the user is doing is just computing the dot product of the responses that the user gets from servers. So the user gets one long vector from one server, the other long vector from the other server. All what the user does after it is computes the dot product and outputs the value. So this is the other property that I stress. And our lower bound will apply to the protocols that satisfy both of these. That have both of these properties. So the first property is bilinearity. The user is computing the dot product of server's responses to output the value to get the value of the IP. The other property is that user secret shares according to some group structure, and database is represented by function on this group, and user can retrieve the value at any element, at any group element. So this is the property that we call being group-based. And our lowest-bound result says that any bilinear group-based PR scheme on any group, so it could be non-abelian or anything, requires at least cube root time communication. So this is our result.
The function doesn't have to be a polynomial. Right?
The function does not have to be a polynomial.
And you don't care about the structure of the group.
I don't care about the structure of the group. As long as the user secret shares according to the group, so the user takes his index, maps it to a group element, secret shares according to the group structure, so represents it as a random product, sends one share to one server, the other share to the other server, and can reconstruct the value of the function at any group element like this, and also his reconstruction is bilinear. So in such case, gauge complexity has to be cube root.
But if it's not a group, but there's some more algebraic structure like a ring, then this low bound is not.
If you secret share according to the additive structure of the ring, you have a group structure there. If according to multiplicative, I'm not sure that
if you can mix and match two operations.
If you have some clever mix of two operations, yeah. So it requires the group. So it's definitely a restriction. I mean, it's not a general.
So your new scheme, is it like group based?
So the notion of group based is, so as far as I understand it, it's inherently two servers. So you take an element, you share it according to the group structure. If you will take an element, in the three server case, what is the secret sharing? I mean, so you can take an element and split it into a product, element in the group and split into a product of three random elements. But then this is two private protocol. It's much stronger than what is happening really. So I don't know how to appropriate. So I know how to general. So I understand how to generalize the notion of being group based from two server protocols to three server protocols where you require two privacy, where you require privacy against coalitions of pairs of servers. This generalize. We don't know. I mean, so but we still don't know how to prove the lower bound of that. And if you talk about one privacy, it's even not clear how to generalize the notion.
So in the three server two private case, I mean, stronger, your lower bound would apply there as well, right? Because
yeah, it would apply.
But then the best upper bound would be square root of the
right.
So you still have the gap between cubic and square root.
Right. And so in that case, like all our reductions go through. So I'll be talking about our proof now. So essentially, we cannot prove, right? We don't know how to prove, say, square root for three servers to privacy. So we have several steps in our proof. So all of them except the last one go through. The last one is some very clean statements, very clean algebraic problem, and we don't know how to solve it.
So what do you mean by the secret sharing based on the group?
Right. So the user. Let's think that the servers don't hold a database but hold a function on a group. It just somehow they take the database and convert it into a function in a group. Secret sharing based on group means the following. So if the user wants to retrieve the value of that function at some group element, say x, what the user does is that he represents x as a random product of group elements, say alpha times beta, where alpha and beta are elements in the group, and he sends alpha to one server and beta to the other server. So this is the secret sharing based on the group. And this is clearly private, I mean, so each server does not get any information. So it's a natural secret sharing scheme.
And so how do you present the group? You have to description of the group in such a way that you can choose random elements?
But here we don't care about the computation at all. So we could have the multiplication table, we could have anything else. So we only care about the communication.
So it's essentially here you're just saying, so for one out of two there is kind of universal secret sharing, or two out of two is a universal model secret sharing scheme,
right.
But like, you know, one out of whatever, 10 or whatever, you need like more structure. The group is just not enough, you need some
right.
Yeah. From your secret sharing.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. So now I'll be talking about how we establish that result. And our technique is the following. So first we introduce some general combinatorial view of private information retrieval problem. And I think that this is an important contribution of its own right, because I think that this may be helpful to this way to think of PR protocols may be helpful to further work on two server case to establish either upper or lower bounds. So I present this combinatorial view, then we specialize it to bilinear PR schemes, then we specialize it to bilinear group-based PR schemes. And then I show that, well, so at least I so I don't prove that I quit. But this is quit. So once we impose both constraints, the question of bounding communication complexity is equivalent to some very clean algebraic question. And that question we resolve using some representation theory arguments. So before I state our combinatorial view of time and creative material, I need to introduce two notions, both quite simple. So the first notion is a notion of a generalized Latin square. So it has two parameters, n and t. So a generalized Latin square is a matrix with t rows and t columns, so it's a square matrix. And every cell in this matrix can either be empty or contains one variable between x1 and xn. So there is some requirement that we impose on such matrices. We say that, well, so if I look at any row or at any column, so every row and every column contains every variable exactly once. So this is the property here. If I look, say, the fourth row, so every variable appears once. And so if n and t are equal, this is just the very old combinatorial notion of Latin squares. This is the first notion. And there is one more, also a very simple notion. So suppose that I have two matrices. One matrix is of size t by t, the other of size l by l. They're both squares, both of the same alphabet. I say that matrix S embeds into matrix A. If I can do the following, if I can map the rows of A to rows, the rows of S to rows of A, and the columns of S to columns of A, such that essentially I will see my matrix S inside matrix A. And so it's slight generalization of notion of submatrix. No, like nothing more. However, it's still a generalization because I don't require this map to be monotone, surjective, or anything. So in particular, a big matrix could embed into a small matrix. If the big matrix is all zeros, it will embed it into a one by one matrix zero. So this is one more notion.
So it's basically you're saying the small matrix is a minor.
Yeah, you can say. I am not sure how stemmed the minor is defined, but yeah. So here is the theorem that states our combinatorial view of the Schroeder PRs. I'll state it in both directions. Suppose I have a generalized Latin square S in just a square matrix A. This is a generalized Latin square, this is just binary square matrix. So given such pair, I can construct a two-server PR protocol if the following condition is satisfied. For every assignment of values to variables in the generalized Latin square, I can complete the matrix, that is, I can fill out the values in empty cells such that the resulting matrix will embed into this binary matrix. So I'll say it again because I think that this is an important theorem. Let's go in the opposite direction. So PR schemes with T-long answers and T-long queries and R-long answers are equivalent to pairs of matrices where one matrix is a generalized Latin square and the other matrix is just a binary matrix. And those generalized Latin square and matrix satisfy the following constraints. So for every assignment of values to variables in the generalized Latin square, it can be completed to a matrix that embeds into this matrix B. does it sound okay? So this is almost equivalence. So I put a star here because it's there is one small subtle notion. So given such pair, a generalized Latin square and a matrix, I can construct a two-server PR scheme. To go in the other direction, you really need one more assumption. So if you have a two-server PR scheme, you need to assume that, say, if the queries are t long, you need to make an assumption that the user, say, tosses at most other t random points. So it can be replaced by other assumptions, so this is one of them. So in fact, there is something subtle about the reduction from PR schemes to this view. However, the opposite reduction is just. So, So and I'll show the easy way. I'll prove the theorem in the easy direction. I'll show that if I have a generalized Latin square and the matrix that satisfy these constraints, then I can construct a two-server PLC.
Just a question.
Yeah.
So n is the number of variables in
the Yeah, n is the number of variables.
And does it matter if two rows are same?
The rows could not be the same because then you will have, so if this row is the same as this row, then you will have x1 and x1, and then in the first column you will have x1 twice.
Basically, from x1 to x3, you have the database.
From x1 to x3, I have a database, yes. So every row here contains a database. So these are large matrices. So here is the proof. So I'm given a generalized Latin square S, and by this funny sign, I indicate that for every assignment of variables in S, it can be embedded into A. So I'm given such pair. I show how I would construct a brain information retrieval protocol based on this pair. And so here is how I do it. So I have these three parties. There is a user and there are two servers. And I assume that all these objects of the generalized Latin square and the matrix, so all these objects are known to all three parties in this game. And so what the servers also know is the database. So given the database, they instantiate the values of variables in the generalized Latin square. So if the database would be of three elements, 1, 0, 1, so they would instantiate x1 with 1, x2 with 0, and x3 with 1. And then they find these embedding maps, R and C, that maps the rows of the generalized Latin square into the rows of the big square A, and the columns of the generalized Latin square into the columns of the big binary square L. So they essentially compute the embedding of the generalized Latin square into this large matrix. And so this is all the pre-processing stage. And now let's look at how the protocol is executed. So suppose that the user wants to retrieve the bit x2 or x3. Suppose the user wants to retrieve bit x3. So here is what the user does. So the user picks a random location in the generalized Latin square that contains the variable. So suppose the user wants to retrieve the bit xi. So the user picks a random location in the generalized Latin square that contains the variable xi. So if I see, so say this location, and user sends the index of the column to one server and the index of the row to the other server. So these are intersections. So he sends to server. So say this location is jk and it contains I. So the user sends k to one server, k to the other server. The servers respond with the values of these embedding functions. So the server one will tell. So the jth row of the generalized Latin square went to the 100th row of the binary square, and similar information user gets from the second server. So it should be 2. And then user can just read off the value of the ith bit by looking at the corresponding location in the big binary square. So this is the whole protocol. Also, it's clear that the amount of communication one way is log t, the other way is log l. So under some very mild assumptions, this theorem has an inverse. So this combinatorial problem is really equivalent, so almost equivalent to the others. So now let's introduce our specialization. So we are not going to prove the lower bound for general PR schemes. We go through lower bound for significantly more restrictive.
So where does the embedding maps come from?
So the embedding maps exist. I mean, because this is our assumption. So we assume for this pair S and A, we assume that for every assignment of values to variables, so the generalized Latin square can be completed in such a way that it would embed into the binary square. So servers compute them. I mean, they have the generalized Latin square. They have the database, so they know the values of variables. So they find the completion. And they find the embedding. This may require lots of computation, but that's not the And in fact, so all the known PR protocols also, so if, say, your protocol that we have seen several slides ago, it also, if you look at it closely, you can see the rectangle, the square, you can see the binary. Yes.
So you don't care like whether your computations are efficient or not?
So the goal of research is it's communication complex. So now we'll introduce our specialization. So first, we specialize to bilinear PR schemes. So so we define binary pair schemes as schemes where the user computes the dot product of the responses. The other way to say it is that this matrix A, so the answer matrix, is just a Hadamard matrix of some order. It is a Hadamard matrix of order R. And so this is equivalent, so this not hard to show, but this is what bilinear, so this is how bilinear schemes look in this language, of combinatorial view. And now we use a simple fact, so really for the Hadamard matrix, so Hadamard matrix of order R is a matrix of of size 2 to the R by 2 to the R. And it's easy to argue that really this, so matrices that embed the Hadamard matrix of size 2 to the R by 2 to the R are exactly the matrices whose binary rank is at most R. So this is some basic algebraic fact. So if we specialize our combinatorial view to bilinear schemes, we get the following theorem. So bilinear pair schemes with T long answers and R long queries are equivalent to generalized latent squares of size 2 to the t by 2 to the t, such that for every assignment of values to variables, the matrix can be completed to a matrix of rank at most R, or binary rank at most R. So this is the notion of, so this is how bilinear pair schemes look in this combinatorial language. And so now we have one more step. So we have to specialize once again, so we have to specialize to group-based pair schemes. And so I need one notion in order to do this. So I want to be able to say that a square matrix of size G by G, where G is some group, respects the structure of the group. What it means is the following. So for instance, so this is slight generalization of the standard notion of, say, circle matrices. Circle matrices are matrices that respect the structure of psi K. So these are two examples of circle matrices. So say, so if I look at the first row, it can be arbitrary. However, every next row is just a cyclic shift of the previous row. So in this matrix, so every next row is a cyclic shift of the previous row to the left, and in this matrix also. So these are circle matrices. I can define, so I want a more general notion, and I'll say that a matrix respects the structure of a group G if the first row is arbitrary and every next row. So columns correspond to elements of the group, and every next row corresponds to a permutation induced by the multiplication by certain group element of the previous row. So this is just a generalization of circle matrices to arbitrary groups.
Yeah. Can you explain again? Is it a multiplication table, and then you're mapping group elements to 0, 1?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a good one. So now remember so this is our view of bilinear pair schemes. So there are 2 to the n possible assignments of values to variables. We know that for every assignment, the matrix can be completed to rank at most R. So there are 2 to the n low rank completions of our generalized latent square. So if our scheme is not only bilinear but also group based, then all those completions will respect the structure of the group G. This is what one would expect. So from what you said, because we map group elements to values, and we also, and this corresponds to the fact that we reconstruct the values not only at some points, but at all points of the group. So in the bilinear group-based schemes, all the completions respect the structure of the group. So and this observation allows us to argue the communication complexity by just counting the number of low-rank matrices that respect the structure of certain finite group. So we can define such a notion. So A with two parameters G and R. G is a group, R is some integer. So this is the number of matrices, so 0, 1 matrices that have binary rank at most R, and that respect the structure of group G. So if we can bound this quantity, so I'm hiding the details here, but if we can bound this quantity from above, we get the lower bound for communication complexity of any bilinear group-based pairs. And this can be done using representation theory. So I'll give just only this one slide. So restating. So this notion can be redefined in purely algebraic terms, as one maybe should have could expect. And so the definition is the following. So I will look at the group algebra F to adjoint G. So So this is some algebra. We don't even need to define it. I can define it if you want. And in this algebra, I count the number of elements that generate left ID. So for every element, I look at the left ideal that this element generates, and if the dimension of this left ideal is a whole star, I count this element. So I count the total number of elements in the group algebra that generate left ideals of dimension of whole star. And this happens to be exactly the number of lower rank matrices respecting the structure of group G. So and this quantity can be bounded using some relatively simple modular representation theory. The bound looks like the full length, and it implies our cube root and lower bound. So I'm really hiding the technical details of the proof, but I want to start this way. Yeah. Right, because what this says is the following. So this inequality says that the length of the database should be at most is upper bounded by the log of the group size times the rank squared. But log of the group size is the length of the questions from user to servers, because what the user sends to servers is just a single element of the group. And this rank, so it's the length of the answer. So, at least one of these quantities has to be more than cube root. Yeah.
When you apply this to the example we had where your group is the editor group mod 2,
yeah.
So you do representation theory over this filter to elements?
Yes.
And
yes.
So are all the representations have one dimensional and then.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not the case anymore?
So the example that we have seen, it will be, say, F. So the field there is not 2D. The field there will be F3, and the group there will be F3 to there. Right. And there, this quantity, so there, this bound will be essentially tight. So there, this quantity will be growing as 2 to the. So if R is log G, this quantity will be, it's not only the upper bound, it's in fact tight. So it will be growing as 2 to the log cube G. But it's a fairly complicated group algebra. It's not semi-simple, so you need some tricks to argue about it. Yeah.
I guess your bilinearity assumption assumes you're doing dot products on bit vectors, right?
Right. So
if you move to larger fields,
it all generalizes.
Okay.
It generalizes to arbitrary fields. So this is the end of the story. So what we have done, we introduced a combinatorial view of rate and finite integral problem. We proved the lower bound in certain restricted model. The hope is that this technique can be extended to more general lower bounds. It would be great if we could do it for bilinear pair schemes without the assumption of the scheme being group based, because bilinearity itself is a very big restriction. So there is a notion of linear pair schemes, and that is considered to be a natural restriction. And bilinearity is even weaker. So it's a weaker restriction, and we have this interpretation that I hope may be helpful in arguing some lower bounds. There is also some vague belief that this view may allow to establish some connections between private and differential problem and magic rigidity problem. So it's some very old question in complexity. So at least syntactically, the problems look somewhat different, somewhat similar in this interpretation. So both of them talk about lower rank completions of matrices. But maybe we can establish some connection there to get something in any of these questions.